So easily. Go to clearwaterfiltration.com and click the donate button. Your donation will go to Pure Water for the World's projects and Clearwater Filtration's mission. And if you have any concern about your water safety or need consulting on water needs for home or business, call Clearwater Filtration at 1-800-NEW-WATER.
All right, we are back. We're broadcasting live this morning at Echo Lake Aquarium and Science Center here on the shores of Lake Champlain. I have to say, a really beautiful morning here. You know, it always is beautiful on the Burlington waterfront. And let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access, an outstanding internet service provider. And talk about keeping your money local. That is important, something we believe very much here at WDEV, and encourage you to do the same. You can call the folks at gmavt.net. Let me give you the toll-free number. You can reach them at 1-888-321-0815. That's 1-888-321-0815. Obviously, you'll find them on the World Wide Web at gmavt.net. Well, you know, Barb Grimes did not mention that our next guest was her Sunday school teacher. That would be former Governor Phil Hoff. We're going to actually do this, if you don't mind, John. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. Let me get a little better organized here. When we come back, you're listening to FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. As I mentioned, we're going to take a break from our Washington report today. When we come back, we'll kick off our discussion with Phil Hoff and encourage you to join us at 244-1777, toll-free 1-877-291-8255. I would ask, let me, if you don't mind, let me let you know when an appropriate time to call in. I do have a few questions. Kind of want to just lay a little base here before we get to your calls. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
Buying a new car has never been easier than it is right now at the Real Deal sales event at Willie Racine's Jeep. Their expert sales consultants don't work on commission, and none of their advertised new car specials has the kind of stipulations that only a few customers qualify for. 36-month lease specials are available on every Jeep in their huge inventory, including the trail-rated 2012 Jeep Liberty Sport for just $237 a month, or the fuel-efficient 4-cylinder 2012 Jeep Patriot Latitude for only $241 a month. You can even drive home in the 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo for just $321 a month. All leases are for 10,000 miles a year with $19.99 due at signing. Tax, title, and registration are extra. And listen to this. Jeep has just announced $750 in bonus cash savings on the legendary 2012 Jeep Wrangler 2-door, equipped with the new Pentastar V6 engine. The best product and the best service all in one place. At Willie Racine's Jeep on Shelburne Road in South Burlington. Online at willieracine.com.
At John Jameson's house, family members are used to stories beginning with these words.
You know, it's a little like insurance.
But perhaps no night at the Jameson house is more feared than pizza night.
You kids ready to order pizza?
Oh, no!
That's because on pizza night, John Jameson shines.
You know, kids, ordering pizza's a little like insurance. You want your protein, as well as your vegetables, just enough but not too much cheese. In insurance, what do we always do?
Look for the best possible options.
That's right. When you carefully select insurance from a variety of different carriers, you get better coverage and better pricing. And what else do we do?
Never stop searching for the best deal.
Yep, now let's get to work.
You may not want this man ordering your pizza.
Where's your sister?
She went to bed, Dad.
It's not even midnight.
But when it comes to your insurance, no one will work harder to get it right. Jameson Insurance, Waitsfield, Richmond, and Waterbury. Walk on in, jamesonins.com.
Capital Ground.
We're artisans at Capital Grounds.
Capital Ground.
It's the real thing. It's a Real McCoy.
Capital Ground.
We have kept up that tradition of great, fresh, roasted coffee. That's why it's so good. It's fresh roasted. Custom French roast, the Senate blend, dark, deep, the Woodchuck blend, good stuff. Coffee's ready when you reach certain stages through the roasting process. There's a first crack, there's a second crack. When you reach that second crack, you know all the oils are coming out and the sugars, and the bean turns a dark, dark brown. It's actually very beautiful. The bean talks to you and says, you know what, I'm at this point and I'm letting it all out right now, and good time to take me out and cool me off. That's our job, is to make sure that everything is right on task.
Capital Ground.
27th State Street, downtown Montpelier.
Capital Ground.
Here's another Vermont Lottery Extreme Fun Alert. The Powerball jackpot is getting very large. You may want to go immediately to your nearest Vermont Lottery agent to purchase a Powerball ticket.
Play Mega Millions in Vermont. It only costs a buck. And for an extra dollar, you can add Megaplier, which multiplies your non-jackpot winnings up to four times. With Mega Millions drawings on Tuesdays and Fridays, and Powerball drawings on Wednesdays and Saturdays, you can play for big jackpots four times a week. Odds of winning the Mega Millions jackpot are 1 in 176 million.
This is an extreme fun alert reminder. The Powerball jackpot is getting very large. Buy your ticket today.
All lottery profits benefit the Vermont Education Fund. Please play responsibly.
Today's estimated annuitized jackpot is $173 million.
We are back. We're broadcasting live this morning at Echo Lake Aquarium and Science Center here on the shores of Lake Champlain. Making history, it's a term that is so vastly overused, but in the case of our next guest, the term totally fits the bill. In 1962, Phil Hoff is elected governor of Vermont, the first Democrat elected governor in more than 100 years. When you look at the Vermont political landscape today, all you see is blue. Our three-member congressional delegation, Senators Patrick Leahy and Bernie Sanders and Congressman Peter Welch, is thought by many to be the most liberal delegation in the country. In Montpelier, the governor is a Democrat, Peter Shumlin. Democrats control 23 of 30 seats in the state Senate. It's 2-1 Democrats in the Vermont House. It did not used to be that way. Vermont used to be all red, solid red. Before Leahy and Welch, there was one man elected to Congress as a Democrat, and he was voted out after one term. Except for LBJ's 1964 landslide, voters went Republican every time until Clinton's 1992 election. Vermont was so Republican that when FDR won a second term in 1940, Vermont and Maine were the only states that went Republican for Alf Landon. The only exciting political question in Vermont used to be which wing of the Republican Party would prevail in their sometimes primaries. In 1962, that all changed when Hoff, one of the so-called Young Turks, finishing his first term in the legislature, took on the first-term incumbent, F. Ray Keezer Jr., described by one Republican as the oldest young man they'd ever met. Hoff, 38, as you just heard Barb Grimes mention, an Adonis, and energetic like the president that was elected 2 years before, won by a razor-thin 1,300-vote margin and would then go on to serve a total of three terms, leaving radical change in his wake. Vermont, they say, has never been the same. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Philip Henderson Hoff. Phil, thank you very much for joining us. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm pleased to be here.
You know, I'm very curious how it is that in 1962, having served one term in the legislature, that you became the candidate. I remember Russ Niquette, who was, I don't remember it, but I've read that Russ Niquette, who was from Winooski, he'd run in 1960, and he wanted to run again.
That's true. But here are the facts. Jack Spencer, who was the incoming chairman of the Democratic Party, was absolutely convinced that a Protestant, non-Catholic, could win as a Democratic candidate. And that view was taken by Bob Lero and Bernard Leddy. So they went after Russ, who's a very nice guy, you know, who had won once before and been beaten rather badly. And they threatened to run against him if he ran, and so he backed off. And that's the simple story.
Did you have any idea at the time that you won how significant it was, your victory, or was it only later that it really kind of sunk in?
I'm not sure I can answer that question at this point. I think I recognized that it was a momentous victory. And my gosh, after 100 years, you don't recognize that, something wrong. So, I think I recognize it.
During the campaign, did you have a good feeling at any point? Did you really feel as though this was something you could pull off? Was there any sort of moment during the campaign when you said, I think I've got this?
Well, I had done a very thorough study of past elections in the Democratic Party, and I was convinced that I could win. No Democratic candidate ever really campaigned very hard. Bob Lero had carried on something of a campaign, and he did very well. He had something like 60,000 votes. So my instincts were that the right person, the right circumstances, some luck, could win. And we went at it in that way. You know, nobody ever campaigned as hard as I did. I say I, because I wasn't the only one. There was Sam Miller, who would set up coffees all over the state. There was my wife,
mm-hmm.
who was, in many ways, a better campaigner than I was. We go into a town, I go through the factories and the stores, and she would do house to house. And she was instrumental. But I think also that Vermont was ready for change.
It also helped that it was an off year presidential-wise. Why was that important?
In presidential years, historically, Republicans come out big time. They sit on their hands and don't vote in non-presidential years quite often. But in presidential years, they come out and they're there in full bloom.
Let me ask you a little bit more about your lovely bride, Joan, who you met a couple of years ago. So where did you meet Joan?
I met Joan at the submarine base during World War II. I was in New London, Connecticut. Was a training base for people going into submarines during the war. And my wife was a student at the college there.
Connecticut College.
College, yes. Yep. And we met on a blind date, and we just hit it off right away.
Wow, so it was a blind date?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What can you remember and tell me about that?
Well, I don't have any specific memory of any specific events. I do know that...
Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you if you kissed her goodnight or anything like that.
Well, I probably tried. But there was just something about it that worked for both of us, and it has worked ever since. We're pretty much on the same wavelength in all things. I could tell one incident. The last date we had, we took a bus from town out to an inn where I would claim that I bought Joan dinner or something, and she would claim that if she got a drink out of me, that was good. But in any event, we went for a walk along the beach, and I ran across a big, great big iron barrel stave that was black and been in the water. So I picked it up and I said, well, if you take the position, I'll slap you, and then you in turn can do me. And she said, okay, but you take the position first. So I did, and then I looked with horror as I saw that barrel stave come way back, and boy, she let me have it, and then she ran and threw it into the water. So that part of our romance, and then coming back afterwards, he came into town, and we walked up to the college. And in the way, in the as we walked along, we ran across an excavation with a red lantern. And I did something I shouldn't have done. I picked up the lantern and I gave it to her as a memory of our last date. And then I was off into the Pacific. I saw her soon after I got out of the service, but then I got involved in my studies and so forth at Williams. Until one day I got a package in the mail, and it was the lantern. Oh. With just this, it's your turn to polish it for a while. And I then got back in contact, and we've been together ever since.
And had four daughters.
Four daughters. Very precious daughters, I might add.
Yep. There's a wonderful picture of you in this terrific book, Philip Hoffa, Red Turn Blue in the Green Mountain State, with you and all four of them right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're very good to me. They keep in contact, and they help.
You probably, not to jump too far ahead here, but it sounds like maybe the slap you didn't give Joan, you may have done years later with Representative Collins of Reedsboro, when you concluded the session there, your last legislative session. Boy, I got to tell you, Phil, you wouldn't get away with that move today, where you took the representative out in front of the state house and slapped her with a paddle. What was going on with that?
Well, it was really part of an overall joke. I had told her repeatedly, because she would come into the governor's office repeatedly, and I kept telling her, if you don't start voting better, which is, you know, along the lines I wanted to, then I'm going to have to punish you, and that included a spanking. So the session ended, and I had one of the troopers went out and found, came back with a big stick, but it was all, she played a part in this. There was no resistance on her part, really. And it was a fun thing. And although when she got back to the Bennington area where she came from, she started to talk as though this was a horrible thing and so forth, but the press knew better. And they never let her get away with that. So that may, in retrospect, look pretty bad, but it was all part of the joke.
When you, the cover of this book that I just mentioned, there's this incredible photo of you when on election night the voters in Winooski, they held back their tally so that you could be back in Winooski when the victory was declared. You've got this tinfoil hat, King of Winooski, and the old flashbulb camera. So when you look at that picture now, 50 years later, what do you think?
I think it looks exactly as it happened. The actually the hat, I think, was made by Bill O'Brien from Winooski, but I remember the event very well, but I don't know what to say about it other than that.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite an evening.
Where did you come up with the line that you declared that night, 100 years of bondage broken?
I have no idea where that came from.
Uh-huh.
I just came out spontaneously. I'd never used it before. And there we were.
Exuberance of the event.
Exuberance of the event.
When you first came in, I think there were some people that were surprised, even I guess the word disappointed, that when you first came in, one of the first things you did is said, we're going to put everything on hold here, that I need a year to figure out what on earth is going on, finance-wise and in a few other areas. What did you see or not see that made you make that move?
Well, let me go back. When I was elected, I then held meetings with every department head. This is before I took office. And what I discovered was that the state was not dealing with some fundamental problems and had really no data, no information that they should have had. And so after thinking about it, I decided that what I would do is I would establish some study committees and put them to work right away and wait until their reports came in to deal with the problems that I saw the state had. The legislature didn't agree with this necessarily, and I don't mean they totally disagree, but when they went about their business as though it were a normal time, and I think they worked almost into July, and then I called them back in January of the next year. But these groups did wonderful work, and they became the basis of what I went forward with.
The shortly after the 62 election, you and Joan went on a vacation, and on the way back, there's this wonderful picture of you sitting in the Oval Office with JFK. Oh, yeah. Tell me about what you remember about him.
There are two people that I've met in this world who just immediately, when you see them, there's just something about them that immediately you recognize real ability and potential. One was Dwight Eisenhower, and the other was Jack Kennedy. And so when we came back from the vacation after the election, we went in to see President Kennedy, and he was just charming. There's something about him that immediately rang true. He was really very able.
A lot of people have compared you to him. Is that what's your reaction when people said that about you?
Well, I would be complimented because he was quite a guy. But so was Bobby. Bobby, in some ways, was tougher than Jack Kennedy. I became a great admirer of him.
Where were you when John F. Kennedy was assassinated?
We had run into a drought period in Vermont, and our farms, bulk of them in Addison County, but not entirely, just did not have enough water. So we began to bring water to them. We found old tank trucks and so forth, and it worked. But at the same time, I asked the agency, I've forgotten its name, to a federal agency to give us some help, and they turned me down. So I immediately sent President Kennedy a telegram saying, you know, they don't understand and this is important. So he asked a fellow by the name of McDermott, who headed that agency. He called him into his office and asked him to come to Vermont. And so he did. And he was here when Kennedy was killed. And he immediately was brought back to Washington, became part of the interim group that ran this country. But so that's where I was at the time of that assassination.
Mm-hmm. You remember your reaction, how you felt about it?
Devastated. Just devastated.
You mentioned Bobby Kennedy. You eventually spoke out against the Vietnam War and supported Bobby Kennedy. There's a wonderful paragraph I want to read here from this terrific book, a biography about you. It says here, on Hoff had become increasingly, if most silently, opposed to the war, coming to believe that it was neither essential nor winnable. As at a private audience in the Oval Office after the tree lighting ceremony, he gathered up his courage and asked Johnson, President Johnson, LBJ, if he couldn't give some consideration to a cessation of the bombing, which many thought was needed before peace talks could begin. Quote, he turned on me as only he could and gave me 5 minutes worth, Hoff later recalled. And then he stood up, and obviously I stood up, and he said, Governor, why don't you go back to Vermont and do things you have to do there and let us take care of our problem here? Hoff thanked him and left. That sounds like a memorable meeting.
I remember it very well. It's not often that you get ushered into the office of a president and then are summarily dismissed. But I liked Johnson, and we got along pretty well. And I might add that afterward there was a conference of U.S. governors. And traditionally, when that occurs, the president's invited to come in and speak. And that was true of this one, which I think was in, I think it was in Cincinnati. But in any event, when he came in, he walked right over to me and said hello. And so he didn't bear any resentments. That was like him. He was a very interesting, very able man.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just remember it very well.
Now, I've read that you have said that your break with Johnson was one of the worst political decisions you ever made. Is that true, and why do you feel that way?
Well, it alienated a hell of a lot of my party here in Vermont. And so I lost an awful lot of political support, and so in that sense it was a bad decision. And it probably was unnecessary. It didn't do any good. But that's the way I felt.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Bobby Kennedy also assassinated. Do you remember where you were that awful June 4th night?
I know I was in Vermont, but I don't remember what I was doing and where.
Mm-hmm. You went on to support Eugene McCarthy?
Yeah, we wanted to turn this... I wanted to turn this country's position on the war around, and he was the best available bet. An interesting man, too.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with former Vermont Governor Phil Hoff. There's so many things you tried to do in the three terms that you were governor. I just want to see if I can touch on a few of them. This whole effort to the regionalization of schools, why was that such an important issue for you?
Well, it's a little less so today, but it's still the problem remains. In this state, schools are run by individual towns. And so they control it, but they lack the resources and quite often the ability, and the result is that our school system was a good deal less than what it ought to have been. It was too much in the hands of a relatively isolated group of people. And so that was one of my main efforts. And it never entirely, so we've made effort, we've made progress now. But we still haven't totally done away with that.
One of the other things that you really felt strongly about was Canadian hydropower. I mean, when you think about today, how popular it is, why was there so much resistance to that idea back when you were governor?
Well, let me tell you the story. First of all, Central Vermont Public Service was the dominant entity in terms of power in this state. But Walter Cook, who was head of one of the co-ops, Vermont Electric Co-op, operating out of Johnson, and he, they were represented by Fred Fayette, a very able guy who was in the legislature. Together, they developed the idea that they could get a lot of power out of Churchill Falls, which is just coming into play. So they started legislation that it would enable that to happen in the Senate, and it passed. But when it came to the House, why, Central Vermont Public Service was in full power, and they fought us bitterly. And I was convinced that it would do the state of Vermont a world of good, bring a lot of cheap power into Vermont, and more than we could ever use, but we could pass it on to other New England states. It's one of my biggest disappointments, as a matter of fact, because they, at that time, Central Vermont represented that they were going to go with nuclear power. And they represented that they would produce it at less than the price we could obtain from Churchill Falls power. And, of course, they didn't come in within a mile of that. We knew that, but we had no real way to prove it at the time. And so it was a wonderful opportunity for Vermont that never reached fruition.
Was Yankee, the nuclear power plant which went online in 72, was that even being talked about by the time you left office?
Well, it was being talked about at that time. In other words, it was in the planning stages, and it was Vermont Yankee power that Central Vermont advertised would come in cheaper than the power we could buy from Churchill Falls.
What did you think about construction of that plant?
Well, first of all, I asked Jim Oakes, who was Attorney General and lived in that area, to follow that closely. One of the things they discovered right off is that they were going to dump the hot water, which is produced in a nuclear plant. They were going to dump it into the Connecticut River, and that would have been disastrous for the fish and other animals that live in the Connecticut. So I went after that, and then they forced them to put in cooling towers. And even at that time, I wasn't satisfied that the safety measures were in place. And as it turned out, that's true. But they had more political power than I did.
Let's go to the phone here. We go to Dave in Montpelier. Dave, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Morning, Governor Huff. It's a real honor and a pleasure to hear the last of the New Dealer Great Society Democrats recollecting about when the country seemed to be doing quite well. And I was wondering, care to comment on where the Democratic Party has gone in the last, since LBJ, since the Great Society, since George McGovern, since your time, essentially. Would you care? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much. And again, it's a real pleasure and a privilege.
Thanks for your call.
Well, the Democratic Party has been the author of most progressive legislation that's passed. It's been an imperfect trip at times. They've have not gone as far as they could or should. But by and large, they have been the leaders of progressive legislation in this country to this date.
You people, when they talk about your tenure, they talk about how the governorship went from a caretaker to more of an activist role. So where did that come from for you? Where did your activism come from?
Well, what I believed. It was perfectly obvious to me when I had the office that Vermont was far behind where it ought to be in a wide variety of areas. And so I was determined to change that. And in many respects, we did.
One of the other things that you did was getting rid of what were called then the overseers of the poor. I mean, that just sounds as though it was something out of really almost the Middle Ages. What did you see as the problem with that, and why did you think it was more appropriate for the state to take on that role?
Well, when I took office, welfare was handled on an individual town-by-town basis. And quite often, they didn't have the means to adequately do the job. And instituted some terrible things like the poor farms, which I thought were reprehensible, and, you know, just didn't do the job. And so it became important for the state to take over the welfare system. And that was a very interesting story, but ultimately we got it done.
Let me take a call from Northfield. Scott, good morning.
Morning, Mark. Morning, Governor Hoff. How are you?
Can I get your question, Scott?
Yeah. Hello? Mark?
Go ahead. Yep, go ahead. Yeah. Can I get your question?
Yeah, my question was, Governor Hoff, you're one of my heroes, and I'm surprised that the Democratic Party hasn't done some great celebration in your honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, you're nice to say that, but I'm not looking for that.
Why did you decide not to run in 1968? You actually announced very early on that you wouldn't run again for a fourth term. I mean, three terms was considered to be pretty incredible back then, but why did you make that announcement when you did?
Well, nobody had. There was no tradition for running for three terms. But I ran the third time because there were things I wanted to do and I thought they were doable. It was the fourth term where I got into trouble. But that third time, and so I ran and was elected on the third term. But at the time, I announced I would not run for again. And that was probably not the smartest thing I ever did, but I was convinced at the time that the tradition in Vermont for serving just two terms was very strong, and that went beyond that. You'd better limit yourself. In retrospect, I think I was wrong.
The gentleman you beat for that third term, a name we all, of course, know pretty well here in Vermont, Dick Snelling. He ran on this idea that part of his platform is he wanted to institute a sales tax. Boy, you had a fun time in that campaign, didn't you?
Well, I had known Dick Stallion quite well over the years, long before I got involved in running for the legislature and so forth. On several occasions, we drove to Montpelier for hearings on one thing or another, and we'd argue all the way up and all the way back. But I held him in real respect. He was a very able guy. But at the time, we didn't need the sales tax. And so, and he was going to use this to kind of revamp some of the things, and it didn't make any sense to me. And so I went after him big time on the basis that we didn't need it.
Do you consider yourself a pretty tough campaigner?
That I was a tough campaigner. I worked hard. I worked very hard. That made me tough. I don't know about that. I would still think I'm a pretty reasonable guy.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back, continue our discussion with former Governor Phil Hoff. A quick reminder that our friends at Stevens & Company would love to see you, Jack, and the rest of the fine folks there. Jack has more than 50 years of experience in the clothing business. Phil Hoff elected some 50 years ago, so Jack predates him. And when it comes to fitting you for a fine men's suit, they can make it happen at Stevens & Company. You'll find them right in downtown Montpelier, at the corner of State and Main, now in with the fine folks at number 9. Say hi for all of us here at WDEV. You can also drop off all of your dry cleaning and pick it up there, too, and you can get a tuxedo all at Stevens & Company. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back here to continue our discussion with former Governor Phil Hoff right after these important announcements.
Tune in to WDEV all weekend long for the grand opening of the season of racing at the nation's site of excitement, Barry's Thunder Road. Join us from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday for live coverage of the car show from Quarry Hill. Then listen in Sunday after the Red Sox for coverage of the Merchants Bank 150. Justin St. Louis, Steve Longchamp, and Amy McGovern bring you all the action. The opening weekend of racing at Thunder Road is right here on WDEV, FM and AM.
Thinking about doing some projects on your home? A home improvement loan from Granite Hills Credit Union is the answer. It's quick and easy. Borrow up to $10,000 with this personal loan at a great fixed low rate. No appraisal or title search required. Remodel your kitchen, replace your roof, or add a room. You decide. Looking to do a larger project? We have home equity loans with new lower rates or a line of credit that allows the flexibility of check writing. Give us a call, stop in, or visit us at granitehills.org. Find out how you can make your remodeling dreams come true.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union will remain open during the Barry Big Dig construction project. Please follow the signs and flaggers to access the facility.
We are high performance, low pressure. We are Walker Volkswagen, centrally located on the Barrie-Montpelier Road. For over 60 years, we have been servicing Vermonters' automotive needs with high performance and low pressure. Buying a Volkswagen is easy with Walker's upfront pricing. Stop by, call us, or click walkervt.com from anywhere in Vermont for your easy upfront price. Eliminate all the gimmicks and stressful negotiations in buying your next car. Purchase a 2012 Volkswagen Jetta for only $16,900 with 0.9% APR for qualified buyers. Walker Volkswagens come with 3 years or 36,000 miles of no-charge scheduled maintenance and Vermont State inspections for life. Our helpful, friendly staff has one goal, exceeding your car buying expectations. With Walker Volkswagen's upfront pricing, you enjoy a better car buying experience. This saves you tons of time and money. German-engineered Jettas for $16,900, only at Walker Volkswagen on the Barrie-Montpelier Road and walkervt.com. Walker Volkswagen is easy as it gets.
Our body, the universe within, will change the way you see yourself. View actual human bodies scientifically preserved and displayed. Gain a greater understanding of the structure and functioning of the human body. Now at Echo Lake Aquarium and Science Center on the Burlington waterfront. Tickets online at echovermont.org. sponsored by UVM College of Medicine, Revision, Dealer.com, WPTZ News Channel 5, and Free Press Media.
Back to our discussion this morning with former Vermont Governor Phil Hoff. Let me ask you, we were talking about Lyndon Johnson, and who is the vice president for John F. Kennedy. At one point, you were being talked about. The idea was being floated for you to become vice president in 1968. How serious was that idea, Phil?
Not very serious. It was at the convention, Chicago convention, which was kind of a madhouse in many ways. So all sorts of ideas were floated and devastated. No, I was never very serious.
In 1970, you decided to run for the United States Senate up against Win Proudy. Boy, you got crushed in that election. You got about 40% of the vote. A lot of people have a lot of different theories of what went wrong in that race. What's your theory? How come you lost so badly, Phil?
Well, I first of all, because of a couple of things. One, the Harrisburg thing. And then I instituted a program of being essentially black teenage kids from Harlem and vicinity to Vermont and programs one-to-one with our kids in an attempt to deal with the race prejudice that existed at that time. But my support in the Democratic, it was the working guy, and they developed an anti-Phil Hoff judgment. Babe Bove ran against me in the primary, and that was not a particular threat, except that I never got these votes back. Would I have done things differently? I don't think so. I still believe so strongly in civil liberties and civil rights and dignity of people and their potential that I suspect I would have done it anyway.
This was the youth project that was done in conjunction with Mayor John Lindsay out of New York. I actually recall reading in this book here by the two journalists and Sam Hand, historian, that you actually felt that you needed to better educate Vermonters about what this program was all about.
Yeah, I did. And I didn't do enough to prepare them for it. So I'm not sure there was anything I could have done except not do it. But I'd read the Colonel Lindsay report in its entirety, and I felt it was a clarion call for all of us in the country to do everything we could to deal with this whole question of racism. And we still have not totally come to grips with that problem. We've improved.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Irisburg affair. This, of course, was in 1968, in Irisburg, where Reverend Johnson had recently moved to town, and there was a shooting that happened. There were some people that took some shots at his house. And you felt as though, I'm sorry, Johnson was the woman who moved in with him, Reverend Lawrence. So what did you feel that in particular the authorities had done wrong on this case?
Well, first of all, they knew right away. They very quickly after the shooting, they knew who it was. But we had some troopers up there. They didn't have their own police force, and this happens in civil rights cases where suddenly the person who has been wrong turns out to be the wronger. And so that whole thing turned out to be an unmitigated mess and reverse discrimination and unembarrassing. But I finally, Jim Oakes went up there and he did everything he could. But ultimately it was all over. I set up a committee to take a look at it, headed by Judge Ernest Gibson, and with people like Hilton Wick, who was head of the Vermont Bar, and a gal named Dorothy McGuire, who was, I think, head of dean of something of a college in Montpelier. And boy, they came, they were very strong condemnation of the efforts of our state police and troopers and so forth.
Reverend Lawrence, of course, was black, and the authorities wanted to charge him with adultery with Ms. Johnson.
Nobody's been charged with adultery, I think, in Vermont for 50 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we probably need to build a few more prisons, huh?
I think so.
One of the other issues that came up in the Senate race, Phil, as you know, was when you acknowledged that in the past you'd had a drinking problem.
And I did.
How deep was your drinking problem?
Serious. I was an alcoholic. Now, I've come to grips with that, and I haven't had anything to drink for, of any kind for... Well, I totally quit. Immediately following that, I tried before, I couldn't quite do it, but I did totally come to grips with it right after that election.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never had another drink, and I don't have any problem with it. I'm not tempted, but I have to admit I am an alcoholic. I cannot tolerate liquor.
But boy, there were a lot of people drinking back in those days. That was the culture.
I don't think it's disappeared altogether either. Today, what's happened is the drugs have come in big time and in a sense, replaced the booze. The booze was the vehicle of relief. And it was endemic. And how I ever got into that, I'm not quite sure. You think I would have picked up the fact that I had a serious problem long before I did, but I didn't.
Did you have to, a lot of people say they have to hit a real low point in order to stop. Did you ever have to hit that low point, and what was it?
No, I don't think... I don't think it happened that way with me. I had a problem and I hadn't come to acknowledge it. And so then I had to come to deal with it, and I did, but it took me a little while. And that's my makeup and my personality. I gave up smoking in much the same way. So, it wasn't a low. It was just that I knew I had a problem and I had to deal with it.
Did you think it was a factor in losing in 1970?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. No question. Yeah.
How big a factor when you compare it to the other issues we talked about, the youth project, the other issues that came up?
Well... I couldn't. It was a factor, no question about that. And it was a major factor, but it was it the most significant? No, I think the most significant factor was the fact that in my own party I'd lost them.
Well, there was this famous night at this event where Peanut Kennedy talked about how Phil Hoff was plastered all over the landscape. I guess he was talking more about political posters, and that was what he was trying to sort of suggest. Yeah. But the word plastered obviously has the connotation it does. And then there was Al Capp talking about how you were stirring up trouble bringing in these youths from New York. I've read in this book here that you were actually more upset about what Al Capp had to say than what Peanut Kennedy had to say. Did you ever call Peanut on the table for that one?
No. Yeah, you know, he was in some sort of position in the Republican Party, and I was fair-based. I can't complain about that. The Capp one, I thought, was trying to really appeal to prejudices of people. And I deeply resented that. But Kennedy, you know, I had created a situation, and he went after it, and I have to admit it was fair game.
So 50 years later, you know, none of us are going to live forever, Phil. You're 87. You're still pretty good shape. So what do you want your legacy to be? How do you want people to remember you 50 years from now?
A person who really cared about people. And I still feel that way today. I think the role of government should be trying to improve the situation in which ordinary people live and enable them to grow and prosper. And I still feel very strongly about that.
What's the one thing you think you did in your 6 years in office that really fit right into what you just said?
I suppose the fight over welfare symbolizes it as well as anything. But I think it was more than that. I mean, if you take a look at my administration, we fought for people and their potential and their welfare at all levels. And we made a difference. So it isn't any one thing. It was a whole atmosphere and effort that went on.
Any regrets? You talked about the Canadian power, but that's not what I'm getting at with this next question. Any regrets on that front that you're talking about in helping other people?
I'm not sure what that question means. I don't have any regrets in terms of my administration. I made some mistakes. I made some political mistakes. I made some political miscalculations. I think that goes with the business. If you're going to do something, not everything is going to go beautifully. And so, in a sense, I suppose you pay the price, but you should.
Mm-hmm. So no regrets?
No, none.
I'm beyond grateful for your time this morning.
I'm not sure that it did any good, or I'm not sure people enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's probably the case. Probably no one's listening, and nobody enjoyed it. So you could, you know, it's good. You could tell me all sorts of stories.
Well, maybe Joan is listening.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Gosh, what a great story, though. And maybe next time I see her, you know, I'll provide her with a little paddle there so she can pay you back.
Okay.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Mark.
Phil Hough, 50 years ago, he was elected governor of Vermont. That's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you all for joining us. I'll be back in the studio tomorrow. We'll be talking rivers coming up on the program tomorrow. Have a great rest of the day. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, FM 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, 101.9 in the Kingdom, and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next.
AP Radio News. Good morning, I'm John Belmont.